this is given the nature of the industry, particularly around issues of security. Perhaps if you could give us three risks that you have prioritized so that perhaps we get the feel as to how secure the identity documents are going to be in the future. Secondly, related to that is the question of the personnel vetting and deterrence towards a very tempting this thing, because there could be people that could offer bribes in order to get into the security system and undermine your security arrangements. And then my last question would be around succession planning. The incumbent is a very, very good distinct administrator, is a good manager, is a good governor of this institution. We do not know whether perhaps after the contract the incumbent is going to be replaced or not. We are not sure. So now we've got to be interested on issues of succession planning. What succession planning are you having, if any? And then if not, why are you not having succession planning? Because we want the department to continue to operate in the same way that it does, if not better. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
I really wanted to, it's not to ask a question, but it's just to make my observation. And I'm sorry that I'm late. I got lost. Okay. No, I was saying thank you for the presentation. I'm very sorry that I'm late. And when, I think on page 23, on market-related salaries, why should we have to wait that the government printing work must be a state-owned company before they can be able to pay competent, efficient, you know, workers what is due to them? Why should we have to lose, you know, competent workers and relying that it should be a state-owned company? So that is my concern, because now we are losing, and we really want those competent workers to remain here in government and government prints work. Thank you.
By Honorable Nancy.
No.
Whatever, can you assist Nancy with the mic?
Oh, thank you, Chair. I don't have a question yet, because when I got here, the presentation was done already. Unfortunately, I arrived this morning, but I am late.
Okay.
I had to fly early this morning.
No, thank you very much. It is government printing work that we all know. They are printing our IDs, our passports, and smart ID cards. And they want to be independent, reasonably independent, and then all that. So that's all what we know about the government printing works. That they are printing examination papers. They are also printing passports for AU.
Hmm.
I think so. Yes, that is what we know. And then okay. From my side, there is nothing. I have been assisted by Honorable Gumede, the vetting. I'm also worried about that. And then, if you have got the responses, you may proceed.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Yes, you correctly identify those three challenges around the quality of security printing, becoming a state-owned company, and the issue of recruitment and retention of staff. I think in terms of the state-owned company and the progress with the state printers bill, I'll ask my CFO to comment on that because he is leading that process.
I think you may proceed, CEO. Respond to all what you want to respond. When you are finished, then you come and deal with the other one specific delegated
okay.
item.
The Honourable Member mentioned the doubling of the budget and market-related salaries. How are we going to bridge that gap? Mm. And I'll combine that with the question that was asked about why do we have to work to become a state-owned company before we can pay market-related salaries. At the moment, as a government component, we are under the Public Service Act, and so our salaries have to be in line with the public service regulations. We did, as some of the Honourable Members will remember, apply for a special salary dispensation from the Department of Public Service and Administration. But unfortunately, 2 years ago, that request was declined by the Minister of PSA. We then decided to adopt a strategy of trying to continue with progression to become a state-owned company, because then we will no longer be under the Public Service Act, we'll be under the Companies Act and the Public Finance Management Act, and we will then be able to pay market-related salaries. It is affordable because the budget slide shows that we have already factored in the increased costs of paying market-related salaries from 2017-2018, whatever. In terms of the machinery that we use for the ID books, that machinery is old machinery. And as part of the asset recapitalization program, which started about 5 years ago and will be completed within the next 5 years, at a total cost of about 800 million rand, all the equipment that GPW has will have been replaced within that 10-year period, including the ID book making machinery. In terms of risks, indeed, as a security printer, we have to mitigate those risks, and ask at the end of my section for Mr. Barnard to comment on three priority risk areas. In terms of vetting personnel, we ensure that all the staff of GPW are vetted according to their respective level, from top security all the way down to confidential, etc. And that vetting is done for us by the State Security Agency. We don't, at the moment, do lifestyle audits or anything like that. But so far, we haven't had any security breaches in terms of bribing of GPW employees. In terms of succession planning, we do undertake succession planning. So, for example, the head of production operations has people under him who he is transferring knowledge to ensure that when he retires in 3 years' time or so, they are able to run that section. Mr. Barnard has a 2IC who probably not today could actually take over his job. And in terms of my particular position, I have been in discussion with the minister concerning that. My contract ends at the end of December, and there is an advisory council as well that has the functions of a board for GPW until we become a state-owned company. And there are discussions going on about what happens beyond the end of December this year. In terms of, I think that was all the questions. I just want to ask Mr. Barnard to comment on the state printers bill and also the three priority risk areas.
Thank you, Chair. As far as the state printers bill is concerned, the CEO has alluded to the fact that we've already got reports. We proceed with the shareholders compact as well as the MOI for the organization. We drafted a business case. That business case is currently being discussed with representatives from National Treasury and EPSA. We hope that that business case will be get more to a finalized stage towards the end of April. Now, these are all the documents that will enable us to get to the point where we table. So I would say the latest that we will be able to table should be around about July, because there's still other processes that we need to go through, obviously, parliamentary process as well. So we should be able to table the state of this bill in July. I just want to add on to the security aspects that Prof was talking about. Obviously, we've got different types of products, depending on the type of product. So besides the vetting, there's also different types of systems in place. For the ID card, as an example, that's a totally different system. It's not linked to our corporate system. It's a separate system, and there's various things. There's certificates going backwards and forwards from us to and Home Affairs. So from the time that Home Affairs submits the data for the manufacturer of the ID card, there's various, in the production process, various data that's transferred and checked between our server and the Home Affairs server. So if you should introduce, as an example, if you should, in the production process, introduce the ID card, it won't go through. It can't go through because the systems will fail. And that comes in as far as the activation of that card and everything else is concerned. So there's no way that that system can be, unless you know, and then you must, I think, a little bit more expert than Bill Gates himself, because there's various certificates. We make use of Law Trust. There's certificates that goes through that authenticate the two servers talking to each other. So it depends on what security area we're talking about. There's various, obviously, risk of obviously, we've got the internet and all those kind of things. But so far, like Prof said, we've had no security breaches. And that's also why in our plan, we talk about 99% of the security issues that's been identified is mitigated. We make use of, besides the auditor general auditing us on yearly on all our systems, we also make use of security firms, and that includes firms like Microsoft, who comes and do audits and identify if there's potential security issues. So it doesn't matter which kind of system it is, and it's based on that that we then say we need to implement plans in order to mitigate those risks. We know it's an evolving business. The risk, especially as far as IT is concerned, you can't say that you're safe today and you're still going to be safe tomorrow. There's always challenges out there, but we address that based on, and we get assistance from the, if I might call it, the private sector, to come and do specific security audits. We need to remember that the new GPW is going to be more working, even the production equipment is going to be more working on the IT backbone. Everything is IT related. So that is very important to us that the IT structure itself is very secure. And I think I'll end there. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. And I hope that we have responded to all the questions that members have asked. Like as I've said, is that CPW is the less controversial entity that we have, and we have been enjoying a lot of cooperation and successes in the project that they have been doing. And we don't really have issues with GPW. And then all that we can say is, honorable member, to GPW is that we really need to applaud them and also encourage them to continue to try and sustain their clean audit status. And of course is that they should continue to increase their capacities, whether in the form of human resources and equipment, to be able to deliver research services that are expected from them. And of course to speed up all processes that relate to the introduction of the state printers bill, to ensure that that thing gets on the roll and it is attended to by the relevant stakeholders, eventually including Parliament. And of course that there are major projects that you are undertaking, then we should really also encourage you to manage those projects, the construction projects, in a manner that it doesn't bring shame to us, in the manner that it doesn't bring shame to us. And of course is that also to continue to vet those officials that
are required to be vetted and to really ensure that we have the right people with the right mind, the right attitude, and to actually work for GPW. And of course is that to be upfront to fraudsters on security issues, whether in relation to access, just access to the premises, and operations, and of course and governance, to be upfront to fraudsters on in those three fronts, and then possibly we can find ourselves moving far much ahead, and of course try to expand your business into other new areas that can bring income to be able to operate efficiently. Thank you very much, and it's a point of after, Honorable Sok.
It's an addition, Chair, of what you've just said, but in order for them to expand and have a very good business, they must expand to Africa too. I can see that on their market strategy, they are only dealing with a single platform in terms of raising their potential to work in Africa. I think we must emphasize on that one, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think we can add more to that, otherwise we're going to distort the crafting of that sentence. The expansion should be. Of course, is that while we are saying expand, we are not saying take too big that you can't chew. There should be a little bit of management on that. Grow accordingly in a manner that you are able to manage the operations and still do your work the manner you are doing now, that everybody is happy about. And, we are happy that the smart ID card cannot be tampered with. We have been told, we have been guaranteed that it can't be tampered with. We want that state to remain like that continuously, whether it becomes our passport, if we can move into a situation where all the documents that we are printing are tamper-proof, I think we'll be much more happy. Honorable members, can we then thank GPW for having spoken to us and then even responded to those specific questions that we have asked. And we say thank you to them. And of course, they are allowed to go if they want to go. But it will always be important that somebody remains an PMP in this meeting to understand what the IEC may be expecting from GPW and report accordingly in time. And honorable members, can we have maybe some 2 to 3 minutes of reorganizing ourselves within the bag, a bottle of water or whatever, while the IEC is getting their machinery sorted out? Just only about 3 minutes. Thank you very much. Then the back, those that may have to balance some other things in their stomach.
I'm on the phone. Thank you.
Hey, Linjani, how are you? Are you alright?
I'm very well, thank you. Black woman. Black woman. Are you alright, my dear?
Thank you.
because we're not sure whether the honorable hand of the honorable president has already appended the signet. We're not sure, but all commissioners are here, and we had the chairperson, Mashini. We've got the deputy chairperson, originally called vice chairperson, Musilan, and then we have got Judge Makanya is here. I think he should raise a hand because he is speaking up for almost the first time in front of you since 2014. Yes, there he is. Then we have got your Reverend Finka. Then he has been with us many times, and we know him. But I think we can also raise a hand to actually pray for us, and that we can have blessings, and also to lead the contingent that must bless for South Africa to have a peaceful local government general elections. And then we will always rely on their prayers and blessings as we move forward. Like as we have said, is that we don't really have all the time, and then we will be assisted because, of course, we have got the capable support of the administrative arm led by the CEO, Musuto Mayabsa. I'm not sure whether this name will be transformed sometime in future, but it looks like it stuck with him. Well, nobody should expect that one day you'll be called the Bloom. So I think that is what we expect from them, and then they should save us any time that they can save, especially, like as I've said, the traditional flights that we know that we usually come across them can find a way of going through the speed of light. Chairperson, you can proceed if you are ready.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair Mashile and Honorable Member. It is our honor to have this opportunity to come and present to the Portfolio Committee two things. Firstly, our annual performance plan. And with respect to that, Ms. Fiona Rowley-Witty will be taking us through. But I think when one has noted that we need to just update and appraise the honorable members on the electoral related matters, and particularly the on the Clopper matter and the Concord situation. And in that respect, I already asked our CEO to make a brief presentation, noting that time is not that much available. Without further ado, I'll request the colleagues to take us through, and if then there are any questions, all the commissioners and the administration will respond. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. In the interest of time, I'm going to start on slide 9 of the presentation, which sets out our strategic goals. Just to recap these, the first one is strengthening governance, institutional excellence, professionalism, and enabling business processes at all levels of the organization. This is essentially the governance, oversight, and administration goal. The second is achieving preeminence in the area of managing elections and referenda, including the strengthening of a cooperative relationship with political parties. That's essentially the key ops goal. And the final, the outreach goal, is strengthening electoral democracy. In support of those goals, there are a number of strategic objectives. And again, in the interest of time, because these are unchanged, this is in fact the third year of our strategic plan. I'm not going to go through those in detail, but I'll head straight to the meat, which begins on page 12 of the presentation. As I said, strategic objective one is the governance and oversight and administration goal. And as a result, the indicators and targets that support this are, in the first instance, the number of governance committee meetings held per annum. The Commission has 6 governance committees that it uses to assist it in performing its oversight function, and the plan is to have 54 meetings of those committee meetings this year. That is 9 per committee. Then there will be 9 Commission meetings held within the financial year, 4 quarterly reports, and 1 annual report. Then, also in terms of governance and oversight, there will be 1 internal audit strategic plan, risk-based plan, and 4 internal audit reports, and 4 reviews of the quarterly risk register and update thereof. In terms of the staff establishment, we target to ensure a 90% filling of all vacant posts. We plan to award 120 bursaries in the last quarter of the financial year, that obviously being the first quarter of the academic year, and then to hold or send staff on 345 short courses. Here you will see the quarterly targets are staggered, so that in the early part of the year where we are seized with election preparations, those number of short courses are lower and they pick up in intensity after the elections towards the end of the financial year. And then we have a performance management system in place, and we aim to achieve 100% compliance with both the performance agreements portion of that process as well as the performance assessments portion. In relation to financial management, we aim to achieve an unqualified audit report in this financial year, and we prepare 12 sets of monthly management accounts, 3 per quarter. We also have an uptime, and our target is 97% uptime. In relation to our IT systems, we're obviously a heavily reliant on IT operation. And then we have an annual, a 5-yearly IT upgrade and refresh, both hardware and platform upgrade. That will take place in the next financial year, but in the last quarter of this financial year, we will begin phase 1, which is the start of the platform planning and the procurement process to identify what we need to procure in the next financial year. Then in relation to the second key strategic goal, which is the operations, we have a target for the average number of calendar days in which elections are conducted, and our target here is the legislative requirement of 90 days, and then the average number of calendar days to replace PR seats, the target is 35 days. The number of days in which election results are declared, LGE and by-elections within 7 days for this financial year. And our plan for the financial year is to have no elections set aside. Our plan for the number of registered voters on the voters' roll is 26.1 million. It's indicated as a fourth quarter target because we count the number as at the 31st of March in each financial year. But obviously the registration weekend coming up this weekend will contribute significantly towards that target, and we should achieve it within this quarter. We verify the voters' roll against the National Population Register 12 times per annum, and then we have a target, it's a holding target in this financial year, but the ZipZip fleet will reach the end of its useful life after the LGE 2016, and we plan to replace that. That target will kick in next financial year as we start to specify what that technology should look like going forward. We have contracted voting stations in place of 22,563. Obviously, again, those will open on this weekend to enable registration of voters. We also have a target in relation to the number of permanent warehouses, municipal offices, and a full-time distribution service being 10, 213, and 1 respectively. the timely sourcing of electoral materials to our voting stations is one of our key indicators, and our plan is obviously that all of the 22,563 voting stations which are on target will be adequately sourced for election. We have a number of political liaison committee meetings at a national, provincial and local level, and our targets here are again divided by quarters, with the earlier quarters in the financial year showing higher numbers than the latter, because obviously prior to the elections there will be more matters that these committees need to consider. We also administer the Represented Political Parties Fund, and we make four quarterly disbursements in accordance with the formula set out in the legislation. Then in terms of electoral staff, this weekend we plan to deploy 50,850 for registration weekend two, and for the elections just shy of 213,000 temporary staff. Then the final goal, as I indicated, was outreach, and the target at the moment is a 60% turnout for registration at the for election day, which translates into 15.6 million voters. We have civic and democracy education events. 60,000 are targeted for the year, with the bulk of these being programmed in the first quarter prior to the elections. Audience reach for television, radio and democracy education content is targeted at 2.5 million viewers and listeners, and we have a target for public perceptions of the Electoral Commission as calculated by our media monitoring reports, and our target here is a 75% neutral or positive. We target to maintain the number of spoiled ballots at 1.6% of the votes cast. International liaison is one of the key successes of the Commission, and here we target to have 30 international liaisons or interactions. These again are targeted towards the end of the financial year, with the Commission being seized with the elections in the early part of the year. We plan to have four research and thought leadership initiatives for the financial year. In terms of the budget, there's an overall summary contained on slide 31. Goal 1 in the current year is 485 million, goal 2, 959 million, and goal 3, just over 200 million. It needs to be indicated that in the financial year that was just completed, we did identify a further 151 million rand that was the cost attributable to registration weekend 2, which we have rolled from last year into this year, and so that is over and above the defined voted budget for next year. This year. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And Chairperson, is there anything to say in the CEO over and above that presentation? None. Honorable members, I think we have received the specific presentation. And when do you intend adding on in terms of the progress in relation to the rest? Honorable members, can we allow them then to receive questions? When then they have responded to the questions, that will give them an opportunity now to just brief us on progress in relation to the government. Okay. Can we then attack them now? Attack them now. Honorable Stope, and then Honorable Kenya, then we follow. Proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I was just saying to them during that break, that few minutes break, I don't trust them, all of them, because the International Working Committee of the ANC was sitting here. So I think all of them, they were there as well, because we know their position in the last chair. But thanks for the presentation. No, thanks for the presentation, sir. I thought maybe the IEC will also cover the issue that is very, very receiving some hot, it's very hot nowadays, the issue of the addresses. I thought in their strategic plan they will just try to cover it as they were trying to cover other matters. Maybe they are going to also to clarify us there, because as you said, Chair, at the end of the day they must just brief us in terms of the talkway things. It's very difficult to say which page that you want to engage, because the page are not numbered. So you'll just bear with us there. But I'm interested to know on the number of contracted voting stations.
Can I just double check, because the document I'm having is numbered on the...
on mine, maybe the sabotage. Yeah.
Oh, they are not the same. Okay.
Maybe the sabotage gave me number. It's not numbered. Yeah. When the presenter was saying number 12, so I was telling him
to come. Sorry for that. Just try to describe the page and then...
I'm sure they will know.
In terms of the reference number that they have on the left for each and every item on the indicator.
Okay.
Then we'll quickly get there.
No, they talk about the number of contracted voting stations. I'm sure all of them they know.
On the left, what is the number that is there? Of that? 2 points? Okay.
When are we talking about
that number, it will assist us to quickly get there. Okay.
Yeah.
Proceed.
So I'm interested to check with the IEC, because one of the experience that one I have is that most of those voting stations, some of them, I don't think the IEC have contract with them. So the chair of the IEC will know what I'm talking about, because I've lodged a formal complaint whereby one of the voting stations, one of the VPs in West Rand, if I'm not mistaken, was using a house of an ANC member there. So I don't know, maybe we need some clarity on this one. How do you make sure that those voting stations are legitimate and are neutral and are accessible to all people? That one. I'm just checking on the network issue, because the challenge of this department in totality is the network, but it, in your presentation, it seems as if we don't have a problem with network. Just checking, and I'm very happy if that is the case. But on the same light, if you don't have network, maybe I can get a clarity in terms of declaring free and fair elections. They're saying you need 7 days. I thought it will be quicker than that, because you don't have network and your IT is very good and you are progressing very well. So why you need 7 days to declare free and fair elections? Yeah, let me just stop the chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you for the presentation. My question is on 131, on performance indicators and tracking. Maybe I don't understand, but I just want clarity. As much as I see the column that talks to annually, if I understand what you have said about the 133, because you talk about quarterly, but I'm concerned now what is happening. Yes, I understand even the number of bursaries, the bursaries awarded per annum. But my question on 1.21 is this. Why are there no quarterly targets for this permanent? Maybe want to say why, because positions to pay, as much as I know that these positions are still pay, but to my understanding, the appointment of staff doesn't take a year to appoint the staff. You can have this appointment of staff even in a quarter or even in a month. That's to understand now how is it is shaped as if it's annual. So therefore there are no performance indicators on the other quarters. There are no targets on the other quarters. Looking at that, we've got nothing except on the fourth quarter. Also on 251, that talks to the same issue, I think so. Now, also to when we look at the two extras, what number to I say this so it, but it says why are there no available for no electoral events? Why are they reduced from 234 to 218? I propose, where did I see that one? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Fiedler.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll be very quick, and I want to say thank you very much for the presentation. But my concern is the election. Are we going to go on with the election in August, since we postponed all these high elections for the third time? Now, my question is on why is the target for registered voters persistently around two-thirds, that is the 66% of the voting age population? What can be done to encourage registration of the remaining third of the population? That's the first question. The second question, with improvement security around the smart ID and the potential for biometrics verification, has the IEC considered doing away with the need to register to vote, so that all citizens with IDs can vote? Why is registration still needed? Those are the two questions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Gumede.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My first question would be around the credibility of the results of the election. I think there is likely to be more contestation around the credibility of the outcome of the elections around the IEC. And I think the greatest risk would be around the ignorance of the public. If the public does not know the processes exactly, which ensure what exactly, how exactly you come to the conclusion that the elections are free and fair at the voting station, because together all parties make sure that boxes are empty. Together all parties make sure that people who are eligible to vote are voting, and together they make sure that people who are not eligible to vote are not voting. And if before the results go out of the voting station into the processing and counting, and that if people do not know these principles, these security mechanisms where we vote, then when first results then are declared unfair or not credible, perhaps we may have the public believing that. So the area of education, information, and communicating these messages, I am not sure is done optimally or effectively, or if you get what I mean, we reach the maximum number that is possible. Because if not, then it would be easy for any loser to create what we are seeing at the University of Witwatersrand or in other situations where police are there, but they are disruptions, and then results perhaps may be not very easy to announce. And then allied to that would be, I've seen in other countries people using transparent boxes. You see they are both here, even without opening the box or emptying the box. And then in South Africa, they are not transparent. Perhaps, is there an obstacle or is there a reason why we are not having transparent boxes in South Africa, that you immediately see that this box is empty, there are no ballot papers in it or not? And then my last question would be around the issue of Why have the number of provincial and local fertilizer stations been reduced from the previous years, when now we are having some judgments against us already? Don't we see that perhaps it would assist to communicate more with the particularly fertilizing officers so that they communicate with their parties and what rights they are having, what rights they are not having? That is my question. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nesi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine is very short. I've just read the report and I listen carefully and I understand what is being said here. But my main worry is the levels of corruption with the staff of the IEC. I'm saying this because I know practically exactly what they are doing. In my area, they will hire a tent for 20,000. They will say a tent is 20,000. Those are the figures, practical figures, I'm not assuming. And then they will hire a tent from the main owner of the tent for 500 rand for 2 or 3 days. And then that money will be shared amongst the officials and the one who has been given the tender. That's what is going on in my area. And I know last time, the last registration, they said they hired the tents. I visited almost all the cities where they said their tents, and those tents were paid by the IEC. But there were no tents in those areas. So I'm worried here because I don't see anything that the IEC is saying in terms of monitoring these levels of corruption and make sure that they don't happen. Because if there are no officials from the IEC, in fact, those who are there are the ones who are corrupt. I'm telling you about something that I know. If there are no people from provincial level who goes to these areas, or at a national level who goes to these areas and check if the IEC, they told you that they've got about 50 tents, and you go and check how many tents are there, and then you see what I'm talking about. So I'm worried that I don't see a plan. How are you going to make sure that this corruption doesn't happen? That's one thing that I wanted to ask. Otherwise, the other thing, I think on the briefing, when you are briefing us about progress, that's another question that I will have.
Okay. Thanks very much. And from my side, of course, like as I'm Honorable Shop has already indicated, is that the IEC has committed itself to actually proceed with the project of actually getting certain particularities of voters on the voters on an ongoing basis. And then if that is the case, then how is that built in the target over the particular period that you think you will require to actually sort out all those that are still remaining? And then we'll expect that how you're going to deal with that one. And then the other issue from my side is that on 1.4.1, why are you targeting unqualified opinion rather than a clean audit? What is that that you think it will prevent you from getting a clean audit? And of course, is that on 2.2.1, the number of registered voters reflected on the voters' roll as at 31 March each year, then you have that figure. But then, why that indicator is not spread? It's not spread to accommodate the effort that you will take to capture additional persons over the year into the voter fraud. Are you expecting nothing that in the first quarter you're not going to have additional persons registered on the voter's roll, and then you'll only just come 31st March and just read that figure? Or is there an effort that will be made to say, at the moment you've got 26 million people, after 3 months we expect that out of the outstanding number in terms of the population register or statistics South Africa or whatever, on the number of people that are not yet on the voter's roll, we will attempt to get 5,000 in this voter's roll. In the next quarter, then we'll attempt to get 15,000. And then it's planning on what you want to achieve, and then so that we can see whether we are managing to get more people into the voter's roll rather than just waiting for the 31st of March in 2017 and have a new figure there. I'm just raising that as, and then the 2.2.3, I think there is a need that of clarity why it is not applicable, because just simply to say the 7 to 10 year cycle, it doesn't really indicate. You must indicate when will this particular session be completed that we expect numbers in. The current situation, when is it going to end exactly, so that we expect now the target. Because you say it's a procure plant number, programmable barcode, scanners, units, and all. What we know is that the scanners that you have now, they are going to be used for the last time in this election. That's what we've been told. But then we are not told that after these elections, in third quarter, whether you'll be procuring new scanners for the by-election that will be happening moving forward. It is blank. You're not saying anything. In other words, what this is saying is you are not intending to procure scanners this year. But the current scanners are actually coming to end after these elections, which we expect around August. But then we still have now from September until March next year. Then we're not saying anything about procuring scanners to be able to deal with any election activities that may be required, especially in relation to by elections. What is that we intend responding on that one? And then the last one from my side is on 341. You've got number of research and thought leadership initiatives achieved per annum. Yes, per annum you want to achieve 4 of them. But then you put all of them on the fourth quarter. Now you're saying that they're going to happen on the fourth quarter, all of them. That's my question. And then if that's not the intention, then we should be seeing them, whether in the second quarter there will be 1 and 2 in the third quarter, and then completing the fourth in the fourth quarter or what. But if the intention is to have all of them on the fourth quarter, say so, it's fine. I don't have a problem. Then you may proceed to respond.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. I would like to ask the colleagues to briefly respond to the various questions that have been raised. Firstly, I would like that the DCAO deal with the questions that related to the targets 1.2.1, 1.2.2, 2.5.1, as well as the 1.4.1, 2.2.1, 2.2.3, and 3.4.1. And then I'll deal with the next page in terms of the, if you can just respond to those questions.
Thank you, Chair. Starting at the back end, the thought leadership, yes, indeed, they will all happen in the fourth quarter. They will be commissioned and ongoing in the third and fourth quarter, but we expect the final product to be delivered, at which point we say they're complete. In relation to the target on ZipZips, 223, the plan is to continue to use our existing fleet of ZipZips all the way through until the 31st of March 2018. Immediately after the elections, there are plans to consider and conceptualize what the technology that will replace ZipZips may look like. And that work is expected to be completed by the 31st of March 2017. And then the procurement process will begin, and then the testing phase will begin. Committee members will recall questions that have previously been asked in relation to our repairs and maintenance spend, which has been significant over the past couple of years, to ensure that our current fleet of ZipZips last the course, which has included a complete, we have a complete maintenance cycle for those, as well as the replacement of internal and external battery units. So we are confident that they will last the course. Then in relation to why are we targeting an unqualified audit and not a clean audit? Because we like to under-promise and over-deliver, Chair. recognizing that the achievement of a clean audit in a circumstance such as ours, where we operate out of 234 local offices, a fully decentralized procurement process, a clean audit is a fairly tough ask. We always aim for it. We'll talk to you in October and see how well we did in terms of achieving it in this year. So in relation to the levels of corruption in respect of temporary infrastructure, this is a particularly high-risk area for us, and we have, over the past 12 months, had a number of cases reported to us, which we have investigated, we have conducted disciplinary action, and we have, in fact, terminated several staff members. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but three, four people who have been caught conducting the kinds of activities you allude to, and every case that is brought to our attention receives the same level of care and attention, mm-hmm. and we do have a zero tolerance to fraud, so we take the strongest line possible in relation to that one. Mm-hmm. In relation to why there are no quarterly targets in respect to permanent staff and then electoral staff, in indicator 251, the numbers of staff here are tied to the registration events and the election events specifically, so they are specific to that quarter. And then in relation to permanent staff, wherever that target was, here, 131, we had a fairly extensive debate about whether or not to make this a quarterly or an annual target, and we determined that, in fact, rather than give a number of permanent staff or a percentage as at the end of each quarter, then the risk is that you will have a bit of a scurry to try and achieve the targets in the last week of the quarter. So because we do it pro rata, where we say that if you are in post for 1 month of the year, you actually only reflect as 1/12 of a person, this is a fairer mechanism in our view of ensuring that we retain a staff complement in place for the full year. Although we only report on it formally quarterly, we do monitor it monthly to ensure we are achieving that target. Chair, have I missed anything? Have I covered?
Thank you. And I would like now to ask our CEO to respond to the questions that were raised, I think, by Honorable Sopir on the addresses and the issue of the declaration of the results within 7 days. And then the other is the issue of the election results credibility. No, that one, the election results credibility and public understanding issues that were raised by Honorable Kumete. I'm going to ask our Vice Chair to actually assist with respect to those particular questions. And but before the CEO responds, the issues that are coming out on the addresses and so forth, they were part of what we wanted to actually briefly appraise the committee about where things are with respect to the elections. So they're all contained in that. Perhaps he should first just give the broader context in the case and then respond to those particular questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to honorable members. Just quickly, two things that I want to add on to what my colleague has said. In relation to clean audit, Chairperson, we were once before this committee and indicated that in an election year, one of the challenges that we are required to fulfill, which is very difficult, is that people that work for us, 218,000 people, each one of them has to have an account. A bank account, and where they don't have, they create a lot of complications for us, and that's one of the issues that we have in this year. But we are managing with a view to a clean audit otherwise. On the issue in relation to staff, I think Fiona may have omitted to indicate that 1.31. One of the issues that we have to make or to ensure is that it is auditable and the evidence exists. And the Auditor General indicated that if we get to the point where we have a third of a person and a quarter of a person, it's not auditable. That's why we have the target on an annual basis. The other reason, of course, is that the amount of vacancies are not something that you can, for your people can design at any point, and so you manage that. In relation to the issues raised by Honorable Sopir, the Tokwe matter is before the court, and we're anticipating that the outcome of the court will in fact almost immediately inform this process. You will have noticed that in our court application we have in fact put that plan. We have indicated an 8-phase plan up to the year 2020. That essentially would be a thing that we would have to put in our plan if the court confirms the position that we have put before the court. But if the court changes that, we will have to revise our plans accordingly. Voting stations and how do we ensure their contractual process? Chairperson, we have, as part of the local PLC process, a process where we identify the voting stations with the party liaison committee. They sign off those maps, and then we go and print. In the instant matter that Honorable Sopir had raised, there were certain issues that we had to investigate. The chairperson will be sending that report to Honorable Sopir, I imagine, at any time from now. In that facility, at issue was that facility immediately no longer became available, and that facility we will deal with in the fullness. In fact, before this registration weekend, we have another alternative facility that we will use. Network stability. We in fact have a process, and this is a process that we extensively talk about in our party liaison committees, where political parties have an opportunity to come once we have tested our systems, particularly result systems, both for penetration purposes, in other words, hacking and all of that, and we have obtained a certificate from an independent firm of IT auditors. We make that certificate available to political parties, and they're welcome to test the system. But once all of that has been done, we pack the system, and we have additional capacity that we bring on board to deal with the issue of the security of that system. The issue that we had in registration weekend one, which I imagine Honorable Shope is raising on the challenge, is that on the morning of registration weekend one, the chairperson himself actually called us to check what the issues were. We had indicated that we had over 100,000 hits within a short space of time, and there were multiple messages we were sending out, and we regrettably at that point hit capacity. We have since addressed that. In fact, it was addressed on that Saturday morning. Further from that, the system was working, and we anticipate to have that ample of our capacity even for this occasion. The issue of 7 days for results, we are not saying, Chairperson, that we are now going to change the way we declare results. We simply are indicating that in law we are required to declare results within 7 days, but we will do it as soon as it's possible for us. I think those were the questions that the chair had indicated I needed to respond to for the moment. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members and honorable chairperson. The issue of credibility of the elections is dependent on four factors. The first one is the quality of the voters' run. The second is the quality of logistics, and the third is the quality of the electoral staff, and the fourth is the political environment. So before we make a declaration on the results, we've got to be able to make sure that all these aspects have been catered for and are dealt with sufficiently. So on the political front, we engage with the political parties and various stakeholders on a regular basis. We are meeting with political parties as individual political parties, but we also meet with them within the PLC system. And we have a system that we have created as well where we communicate with civil society. We've got a forum where we meet with the civil society on a regular basis. We meet with the universities, with SRCs, just to be able to make sure that as many people as possible have got access to information and they understand exactly what is happening. Obviously, this does not deviate from the fact that we've got other mechanisms that we're putting in place, such as the voter education and civic education programs, where we are trying to educate the electorate in terms of things that are expected in terms of our processes. But the last aspect within that environment, it's mechanisms that have been put in place in law. When we go to local government elections, you've got mechanisms where political parties and candidates or any person can object to certain things that are happening within the electoral process. Going into local government elections, you've got Section 51, Section 59, Section 67, Section 62, as well as Section 65. Now, Section 65 is objections material to the outcome of the election. That's why earlier on it was indicated. The reason why you've got 7 days within which you're supposed to determine the outcome of an election, you've got to allow for all the objections to come in as the commission, and after you've dealt with it, then you can be able to deal with the announcement of the results. You cannot announce the results until the commission has actually dealt sufficiently with all the objections that are material to the outcome of the elections, which is your Section 65 objections. So once we have dealt with those kind of issues, then we are able to make a determination in terms of whether the results of an election were free and fair, and then we announce the results thereof. Essentially, those are the kind of the issues that we take into consideration in coming to a determination.
No, thanks for that clarity. Thanks for that clarity. I think there are just simply two things. I think the issue of the political environment, there is very little you can do as the IEC on that front. It's very minimal. the political parties and the voters themselves, then they have to actually do their work in a manner that they enhance the election, not to be rendered questionable. It has to be, we have to make that particular call, that political parties and civic leaders and all, anybody that is a leader, together with the voters themselves, they must behave in a manner that they enhance the credibility of the elections. They must assist the IEC. The IEC is an institution supporting democracy. And therefore, all of us, including government, including everybody in this country, must work seriously to assist the IEC to perform its functions, not to undermine. I think that is the one thing that needs to be made clear. But the CEO, on the matter of addresses the targets that we are talking about here, is that there was a constitutional court ruling which you planned to actually address it. And that constitutional court ruling is not expected to be overturned by anybody. We expected that we would see the targets in relation to that one. Let alone the new issue of the electoral court which you are actually dealing with, as you report to us. That will actually change the targets if the outcome is different. But the first one that you already have, that says from that particular date of order, moving forward, then you get these particular addresses of these people for anybody that pitches up in your office. How are you actually dealing with that one? That's the one that we're talking about. We're not talking about the one that is questionable. Addressing that original court ruling is issue, because that one was clear to everybody. And then how are you actually dealing, what are the targets in order to achieve that one? And let's forget about this one, that we don't know when the ruling will come. And then they will deal with its impact whenever it comes. And if it needs you to adjust the targets, then we'll adjust the targets. But that's what we're actually trying to talk to. Honorable members, can we then give the IEC an opportunity to give us that progress report? And also you can add even anything that you may be missing that you have not actually said in relation to these questions. If it's possible, you may proceed, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I would request the CEO to then take us through and also respond to clarify the question you just brought up. Thank you.
Chairperson and members, thank you for the opportunity. I think I'm going to rush through this one very quickly and we can take questions. Chairperson, in the matter before the Concord, or the matter that the Concord ruled on the 30th of November 2015, is in our respectful submission to yourselves, not the same matter that is before the court now. And I say this for the following reasons. You will recall that the challenge before the court then was that the Electoral Commission did not provide the a voter's roll with addresses to all the parties and independents in the Dogwe by-elections then. Not only the independents, but to all of them. The Constitutional Court at that time then said, we need to provide a voter's roll with addresses to all certified candidates and political parties where those addresses are available. That we have done. In fact, the court also said it is important that we harvest data from the applicants for registration with addresses. And in that instance, and I say in that instance, the court said for purposes of dealing with that local situation, it is not going to deal with the issue of why addresses were not on the voters' roll or where we don't have them. It will ask us from the 30th of November going forward to ensure that whenever voters come to apply for registration, we get their addresses or sufficient particularities. We submit to this House that we have done effectively from the court date. We have devised a form called a REC-AS form, We have implemented that after consulting extensively political parties and candidates in the Tokwe situation. It is so that all of the applications that have been taken from the 30th of November have, where the address is not available, have the sufficient particularities of the voter. The application currently before the court is different in that we provided all of the political parties and candidates a voter's roll with addresses where we have those addresses in our possession. It is so that some of those voters that did not have addresses historically, we did not have on the voter's roll. But it is also so that where we had sufficient particularities, we did not classify them as addresses because they are not addresses. And therefore, on the voter's roll, it would have seemed that there was no address. We tried to explain that when we were asked by the lawyers representing the independents, and that is documented extensively in a letter or correspondence between ourselves. The matter now before the court, as we understand it, was that the court had set aside, the electoral court had said, where we don't have addresses, it gave us the impression that we had fraudulently registered those voters. And the court, the constitutional court, had indicated, amongst others, that where a voter does not have an address, it is not a way for us to then not admit the application. We are now approaching the court and saying, Constitutional Court, this is what we understood you to say, but this is the Electoral Court says the absence of an address is a problem, and we are asking them to clarify. To the extent that the Constitutional Court has not said we now want addresses from history, that's why we did not. But we did not deal with this plan. But we have, given the Electoral Court situation, we have now updated and put before the court two applications. The first application clearly deals with a matter that is seeking to appeal the electoral court judgment. As I've indicated, the matters were slightly different, and we want an understanding. More than anything, there has to be certainty about what the apex court has said and how that is applied by all of us in the lower courts. The second application is an application for direct access in the constitutional court in the event that the leave for appeal is not admitted. And in that application, essentially, we are seeking the apex court to suspend the need for us to have addresses for everyone who even registered in 1998, given what was before them last year. But we have not stopped there, Jefferson. We have, in fact, as we speak, government has a technical committee that deals with addresses and allocating addresses to households. We submit before you that as recently as last week Friday, government, the interministerial committee dealing with this, advised us that there are 8 million households in the Republic that don't have an address, and that they are going to put an address, you know, against. We respectfully submit before the court that the process we are taking into account to have addresses harvested needs to take that process into account. We cannot provide addresses where they are not available. We will seek sufficient particularities. But as we speak, we are already getting a lot of addresses from databases in possession of government, and we are seeking to validate those addresses with the registered voters. So we are dealing with the matter in a two-pronged strategy. We will get the addresses as we need to do, but we are saying to the extent that there are processes of providing addresses that are undertaken by government, we will have to wait for those processes to complete. In other words, an address to be allocated and for us to then get that address to be on the voter's roll. And we submit that process will conclude in June 2020 in our papers. And that's really what we are dealing with.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is there anything to be added, Chair?
Chairperson and honorable members, I think we may have indicated, I cannot remember whether we have emphasized this particular matter, that due to the fact that we're dealing with exigencies emanating from the court, there could be some changes at a later stage in relation to the budget. We've got to meet with the minister as well as treasurer to try to see how we factor in some of the aspects that are not factored into the budget that we present to you. So we are alerting you to this so that at a later stage when we come back to you, it does not come as a surprise. But as you've correctly observed, there are certain exigencies that have arisen as a result of both the Concord as well as probably as a result of the Electoral Court. We still seek clarity. Once clarity has been given, it could still have financial implications, and we will indicate once again to you what those implications would have been by the time we meet again.
Okay. No, it's, thank you very much. And I think it's, you will go back and IEC and see and think what is there that you can do in terms of your strategic plan, how you collect those addresses, where you think you can collect them, so that you are able to see you on your own plan. Because you have committed to collect the addresses. I mean, you see, when you've got somebody staying in Sandton, as registered in a voting district in Sandton, doesn't have an address, and then that address should be collectible. It should be collectible. And then on similar people, how is the IEC going to collect the addresses? But we are not, I mean, one should not expect you to create addresses, because it is not your responsibility, it is for local government to ensure that people that are staying within its jurisdiction have addresses, know where they can go and find them. Where there is no address, the IEC cannot manufacture addresses. But where the addresses are available, and then in terms of the Constitutional Court ruling, what is there that you will be doing? How can we measure where they are taking an effort to do what it, you can do in relation to that, so that we see you on a strategic plan also moving forward? Because if the strategic plan is silent on that matter, then one can conclude that no, you are not doing anything about it. But we have seen in the open registration where you had a form that you are collecting these additional particularities of voters to come and update them. Now, we just have to targetize in the strategic plan in accordance with the way you understood the original ruling. Let us not try and worry about the ruling that is still coming, which we don't know whether it's gonna, what it's going to say. And I think that is the thing. Well, honorable members, I think we have received now that this particular briefing progress report, the IEC is on an appeal to the Concord, seeking Concord to clarify, because it ruled, then a lower court in the form of Electoral Court, then it ruled differently in a manner that it was almost changing the Concord ruling in terms of applications and operations. And then now they are seeking clarity on that. Can we then await that particular outcome? And then we come again and see the implications of that particular clarity from the Concord. Honorable Sobe.
Chair, this is not the first time we're engaging in this matter with the IEC. The fortunate part is that I also sit on the meeting of all political leaders in the absence of my CIC, whereby they call us to brief us about these challenges that they are facing. I will repeat what I said today in this meeting, because they have done the presentation. They told us, if I'm not mistaken, you said it's 63% or 68% of people in South Africa who does not have addresses, insufficient or whatsoever. But I remember that figure and understood it by telling us that we have 63 to 68%. But I also disputed that chair on the spot to say to them, it's impossible. It's only IEC who's coming with this figure. I even advised them, Uti, you know, the fact of the matter here, why there is this noise in South Africa because of addresses, is because during the local elections government, there are people who are being bused from other areas to another area. That is the fact of the matter. If there's no one who's busing people who have not had this kind of challenges, I said to them, IEC people, if you can go and talk to the social development department, because here in South Africa, our sisters, they are applying for grants, and the social department, they don't give you a grant if you don't have an address. That's one. You don't. That's one. I'm talking about people from informal settlements, because the argument here is those people who are residing in informal settlement who does not have addresses. I said here in Home Affairs, when you go and apply for ID document, you are expected to provide your address. RICA, everyone in South Africa, is a small number, I don't know how many percentage, but 90% of people in South Africa, they have cell phones.
Do you mind if I intervene, Honorable Sir?
I'm just wrapping up, Chair. I know that you don't want me to continue, but I'm wrapping up. But
just wrap up anyway.
Yeah, I'm just advising them that while they are waiting that appeal in the court, they must consider those things, because it will be easy for all of us as South Africans, as political parties, we are not going to make noise. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yeah, why I was saying I wanted to intervene is that we should understand the current situation about the registration to vote. The decision of a potential voter decides to go and register to vote. People decide to go and vote.
Mm.
I'm sure we may have had an argument of people, even Honorable Figland was just saying it just now, to say, no, if a person has got an ID book, that person should qualify to vote. But the current situation is that a South African citizen or who's actually of voting age must voluntarily and willingly move and go to the IEC and register to vote. Currently, no one is forced to go and register. So now, some of these questions I've heard, they've been talking about the social development and the rest, to go and extract addresses and then on behalf of the voter himself or herself. Well, there are many questions that will arise about that. Legality questions and authority and on which authority will you go and seek my address anywhere else to go and put it on the voter's roll. And I think the only thing that we need to be doing is let's give the IEC an opportunity to get the clarity from the Constitutional Court about this. Only when the Constitutional Court has clarified, has said, go and get them, then we should then be engaging the IEC on the implications of that ruling. And, Honorable Machine.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I would like to present that in fact what Honorable Shopitop has indicated, that's what the CEO alluded to. There is a parallel process which is continuing at the interministerial level, because the issue of the address, as you pointed out earlier, Chair, is in the jurisdiction of other executive authorities. All of them are part of that interministerial committee. The statistician general is part of the team, working with all the other various departments, Department of Health, Department of Social Security, and the COPTA, and so on, the House of Traditional Leaders. And that's what is the process that is underway as we speak. The point the Commission is making is that the practicality is the issue. That in the given time we have, to the extent that in a voting district, let's say of 3,000 people, one person does not come forward, because at the end of the day, the person must come forward, as you pointed out. If that one person does not come to provide the details and having gathered everything, what is the status of that voter's roll? Secondly, on the other side is that some of the information that goes into cell phones and all those things, a large number of people do not necessarily reside where they might have got their cell phone number. People buy cell phones for their parents who live in the rural areas, but it's under my address in Soweto. Mm. So we can't just take the name of a person and link it to a cell phone and then put it there. But all those mechanisms are part of what we've pulled together as matters stand. But in the time that is given, come the 18th of May, and there are 16 million people that don't have sufficient details, we need now the court to give an order. People who don't have those details, do we actually take them off the roll, which is a disenfranchisement issue, another constitutional issue. So that's where we are, but we welcome those inputs that were made by the leaders of the political parties. Thank you, Chair.
No, it is fine. From my side, all what I'm saying is we must also check the legality of just going around and extract addresses and speak to people's names who have registered voluntarily on their own and decided not to give you an address. When you do that, what is the legal power that you have to do that? Just clear that those kind of matters and not find ourselves doing something that is wrong. Because my understanding is correctly, nobody is forced to register to vote. People register voluntarily. They just walk and go and register.
Mm.
Now the question is, how can you decide what information should go on the roll in their name?
Mm.
So we must have to double check and make sure that all those are cleared. And then before we actually find ourselves on the roll, and I think we have exhausted this particular matter for now.
Yeah.
And let us put, what is it that is burning?
No, I think you have covered the chairperson that it really is the prerogative of any citizen of South Africa. I think the prerequisite here is the valid identification of a person. I don't want my address to appear in that register roll. I don't want. And the guilty are afraid because they've been passing people. So I'm just saying that I don't want my address to appear there, because the prerequisite here is the valid identification of South Africa. So really, I really don't know what is the problem here.
We'll discuss that when there is a Concord ruling, because at the moment we can't influence the Concord ruling to clarify this particular matter. I will really pray. Maybe Reverend Finka should assist me. Pray that we stop talking about this matter. We go to the progress report. We know where the IEC is on this matter. It is doing something to actually get clarity for all South Africans,
yes,
so that we know, all of us. And then we can only come and speak on the implications of that clarity,
yeah,
when it is out. Okay, and then on that score, it's
Ntateni,
I actually wanted to close.
No, please,
yeah. Yeah. No, my head.
No, give me a chance.
Just
give him a chance.
Okay.
No, sir, it's not about this issue. Mine is different. I did talk to Mr. Deputy Chair of the IC. there is a challenge here where in a bit, not a bit, the what you call this thing now? The area where people are supposed to be voting. My parents, for instance, have been voting in a street which is behind them. Now they have to travel, passing about five streets, whilst the city which they have been voting and they are peering to that city, they are told that because of this new demarcation, they are not supposed to be voting there. So my question was, is it not supposed to that people must appear to the voter registration, which is what is this thing?
Because I think it is necessary that we must call all upon political parties and civic leaders. They must respect the boundaries of the voting district. They must respect the boundaries of the ward. That is what the Electoral Act is saying as well. You must vote in a voting station in your voting district where you are resident. Even if you are here at Darling Street, you have been staying this side, but the boundary is Darling Street and the voting station is just across, you can't walk across and go and vote there because it is not your voting station anymore.
There is a need
that the boundaries of the voting district.
That is not my question, sir. My question is, you are staying in this ward. Now, once you are staying in this ward, you are being removed because there's demarcation and there's a new voting station. You are being removed from where you've been voting, and you have to travel a long distance in the same ward. Not out of question, but if it's out of question, then I can leave it like that.
That's good. It's exactly what I tried to explain. Remember that the voting districts are in a ward. They've got the ward demarcated into voting districts. You see. And then now, if the IEC has redemarcated the voting district, and now you are no longer, the voting station that you've been voting on now, it is no longer in your voting district. You are now part of another voting district. Then you must re-register. That's what I'm saying. The important thing is to respect the boundaries as determined. Yes. That's a good one. Yes. Thank you very much. I think let's thank the IEC for having spoken to us. We know what they are going to do, and we know where they are in terms of this crucial issue, which is actually even threatening our local government election. And then we hope that it will be resolved speedily so that we continue and hold our elections as prescribed by our constitution, and we don't deviate from that. Thank you very much, and all commissioners and the staff from the IEC. Thank you very much. This meeting is adjourned.
Okay.